How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Figure Four Daily. We are here live in Seattle with Chris Jericho here in his hotel room, as creepy as that might be. And how you doing today, Chris?
It's good. It's always nice. I mean, I've known you for years or known of you, but it's nice to actually meet you face-to-face, even if it is for the first time ever in my hotel room where the bed has been turned down. I'm eating. You're sitting on the floor. This is turning into a very close encounter.
It is a very close
encounter.
We ain't
talking about your Supernatural podcast either.
After Dark, yes. We're going to talk a lot about podcasts today because I don't know if you're aware of this, but your publicist has also booked you on our show on Wednesday, I believe.
With Dave?
With Dave.
Okay, yeah.
And so you know that when you're on with Dave, he is going to be talking about one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Wrestling.
Right.
And so if I want to talk to you about Bigfoot, it's got to be on this show. If you've ever tried to talk about Bigfoot on a show with Dave, it's not happening.
It'll be about some wrestler from 1975 that worked in the Pacific Northwest area. He was 6'8", and his name was Tyler Johnson.
The Sasquatch.
The Sasquatch, right.
That's right. Now, you're here in Seattle. You just flew in. It is raining like crazy. How do you like Seattle so far?
Well, I used to live in Vancouver. So I know the Seattle, Vancouver, Pacific Northwest vibe when people say, well, it's raining today. It's like it rains every day in Seattle, pretty much. You know, I always dug Seattle. I mean, I had probably one of my favorite matches of all time was here at the Quest Stadium or whatever it was called for WrestleMania 19 against Shawn Michaels.
That's right.
And I spent a lot of time here, played here a bunch of times with Fozzy and seemed to always end up coming through town. And also, every time I do a book tour, it always goes through Seattle, and I think that's because of the Army bases or the Air Force bases. So I spend a lot of time here. It's great.
And are you going to Portland with the book tour?
No.
Really?
No, this book tour is pretty it's pretty quick. It was 5 days in New York, 2 days here, and then like 3 days in Dallas and a couple days in Florida, and I'm done. So
the new book, by the way, just came out. In fact, our books had the same release date as I've been plugging for months. Chris Jericho, the best in the world at what I have no idea. And I'm sure it's selling a lot better than mine at this moment because every time I go to a bookstore, yours is there and mine is not. So I want to deface books. But is this like you've done two previously and this is the third one and obviously your career is continuing. Do you have like have you thought about what you want to do in terms of your writing career? Is it going to be like one more to kind of cover the end of the wrestling career, and then as you go on, maybe something about touring or what is your kind of, or do you even have an idea for books?
I never really planned that far ahead. Like when I did my first book back in 2007, A Lion's Tale, I didn't have another book deal. It was just a one and done type thing. But that book ends, like it was 2007 and it ended it in 99. And people are like, well, you didn't even get to the WWE yet. And that's what we want to read about. I was like, well, that's kind of what I'm going for. It's like, I didn't want to demean any of those stories because I had so much to write about. And I didn't want to cut them short or edit any of them out or gloss over anything. And, you know, I'll tell you, that's the reason why I didn't do a book with the WWE is because I didn't want it to be that way. But the real reason is they just never asked me. And when I left in 05, I was like, the first thing I wanted to do was get a book. And then when I got a book deal, I'm like, I've got way too much stuff. I could probably do, you know, a couple books out of this. So I did the first one. It did well. They signed me for a second one. So I did Undisputed. That did well. They signed me to a third one. And then I'm like, okay, what do I do here? Because it's 2011. This book ends in 2007. Now I'm writing a book instead of like 19 years or 12 years. I'm down to like 3 or 4 years. So I was a little bit cautious at first. I was like, do I really need 3 autobiographies? Like Nixon has one, you know, and I have 3. But then once I started, I knew that I had the Shawn Michaels feud from 2008, which is the cornerstone of my career. And one of the greatest angles in WWE history that went 7 months. I knew that could be a big chunk of the book. And then I knew the Mysterio angle was just as good. And then there was the Punk angle in 2012. And then the resurrection of Fozzy and Dancing with the Stars. And, you know, going to Iraq 3 times and getting stranded in a unsecured war zone where there may or may not have been Taliban snipers in the area. Just all this sort of stuff. I got a lot of good stuff to write about. And then once I started getting into the book, I started having to cut things because I had too much material. So what to do in the future? I have 15 or 20 great stories already for a fourth book. And I see people like, you know, Chelsea Handler or, you know, Bill O'Reilly or people like this that just write books. You know, Russell Brand. I just saw him the other day, and he'd written a book basically about politics. You know, I think once people get into your writing style, which they are now, they know what they're going to get. They're going to get a laugh, have some fun, kind of a real laid back tale telling style that I have. I could probably write books about a bunch of different things, and I would like to continue, but it would have to be every 3 or 4 years because it's too daunting of a task. As you know, it takes a long time to write
a book. It's a life shortener.
It is.
Yes.
You know, it really is.
First one was more than the second, because the second we just had to like revise it.
Mm-hmm.
But after I wrote that first book, I was just like, I don't care what happens in wrestling. I am never writing another book again.
And that's the thing. It's like, okay, I made a decent chunk of change for the first couple of books. And for the third book, it doubled. It's like a big salary or guarantee or offer, whatever you want to say. But then one day I just went through my head about all the hours that I'd spent on it. And I think if you work it out, it's like, okay, yeah, you're making, let's say, you know, whatever it is, you're making $100 to do it.
Yeah.
But you're working 500 hours. It ends up being like, you know, $1.07 an hour. I make more money if I was working in a Mexican sweatshop, you know, making Kmart clothes than I would for this big book. But it's fun to do, especially when it comes out, because when you make a record or you make a book, it takes such a long time from the creation process to the recording or to the writing to the editing to the, you know, the mixing, everything that you do to make an album or to make a book. It's a very similar process. It takes about the same amount of time, too, 8 months to 9 months to a year. And then you don't ever want to, like you said, I don't ever want to read this book again.
Yep.
I don't ever want to listen to this album again.
Yep.
Just put it away for 6 months. And then when it comes out, you check it out. And it's like, wow, this is really good. But I notice with my books, like, I'm so bad when I'm reading them in the edits. I'll debate for hours over, should it be the or and?
Yes.
You know?
And you've read it so many times, you don't even know if it's good or not.
You don't even know. And then I put it away and send it in, and then I read it, you know, 8 months later, I'm like, that should have been and.
Yeah.
And I put the.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think it's a good time to, when the book comes out, you get to relax, hear the reactions, read the reviews, because that's why Twitter and Facebook is so great now. You get the instant gratification, you know, go to the signings and see the people that are buying it and all that sort of thing. So it's a fun process when it comes out.
Yes. Now, this seems like it has nothing to do with anything, but Mike Goldberg, who is a UFC commentator, he did the NFL last week, and he had all of these people on Twitter who did not like Mike Goldberg doing the NFL. Mm-hmm. And so he went on Twitter and he said something like, "Hey, buddy, fuck off," or something like that. To some fan that had just like, he didn't
right.
like. And I was kind of like, really, you're Mike Goldberg? And some guy on Twitter got you so mad. So I guess the same thing kind of applies to you. I mean, some people don't like to read reviews because it doesn't matter how good your book is. There's going to be people that don't like your book. How do you just kind of, do you sort of ignore the negative feedback, or do you kind of like look at it sometimes and go, well, there's something here that I could learn from, or how do you deal with it?
I learned a long time ago, Brian, that the only way I can really judge if it's good or bad is how I feel about it.
Yeah.
And I'm my own worst critic, and I believe me, I don't like a lot of stuff that I do to a fault, especially going back in retrospect. You know, I remember there's a match out there. It was a four-way match in ECW for the TV title, me versus Shane Douglas versus Pitbull versus Scorpio. That was voted best match of the year in ECW, and I can't even watch it. It's the shit. It's a piece of shit. But at the time, it was good, but you just go back, and it's like, oh, I hate it.
Yep.
But, you know, when you're going to go into the wade in those waters of social media, you have to understand that it's awesome when people say that you're the greatest thing ever and give you a 10 out of 10 and you know, nobody can ever beat this guy, greatest of all time, whatever. And it sucks when people go, this guy's the worst. He should never poke his head out into the sunlight again. Go away, you know, fuck off and die. Don't ever write a song or write a book or work a match. Just go home.
Yeah.
So if you're going to go on social media, you have to expect both and take both with a grain of salt. I don't really worry about reviews because, I mean, I remember we did a show last year with Fozzie at a festival in England called Bloodstock, and the big magazine's called Metal Hammer, and we had a great show, but we played, it was like Exodus and Slayer and Municipal Waste and all these like really heavy bands, and us were more of like a party rock type band, Van Halen in 79 sort of thing, and they said that Fozzie's as heavy as lettuce. Wow. And I just read that. I'm like, that's such a horrible review, but it's so funny. I can't let that one go.
Yes.
So I got a friend of mine to go to the store and buy a head of lettuce, put it in a box, and we sent it to the reviewer at Metal Hammer and said, you know, compliments of Fozzie. Anytime you want to compare us to a vegetable or a fruit, feel free. Thank
sure.
you. You know, and stuff like that, because that one is just like, oh my God, it's so bad. But, you know, you got to take it with a grain of salt. Like I said, the only way that I can judge is whether or not I like something. You know, I mean, perfect example is the Night of Champions match I had, my last match in the WWE, maybe last match ever, never know, against Randy Orton. I mean, it was a great match, and I felt it when I was in there, when I walked out of the ring. I just, like, that was great. Like, yeah. That was the best that I could possibly do. And, you know, people voted it the best match of the night, and people loved it, and this, that, and the other thing. And then there's still the people who are like, what are you talking about? It was slow, and it was plodding, and Jericho's too old. He should retire. He sucks. He's the shits. And you're like, what match were you watching?
Yeah.
Because it wasn't that match. And if it was, then you went in there not understanding what wrestling is. So then you get into those people where you're kind of like, well, you don't even know what you're talking about. So if somebody really bothers me on Twitter, if they say something out of line, I will never respond to it, because usually they have 10, 1,500, 600 followers, you know, 10,000 followers. I got 2.5 million. I don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
I'll just block them. That's my little thing. You just block.
Yes.
I got you.
Yes. Now, since we mentioned the podcast earlier, you have kind of had the opportunity to really live the dream, in the sense that some kids grow up and they want to be wrestlers and they become wrestlers, and great, you know, you're a wrestler. You went to school for journalism, right?
Right.
Okay, so you went to school for journalism. You're doing a podcast now, which is really kind of it's a form of journalism.
Sure,
you know?
It is. Of course it is.
And you got a chance to be a wrestler. You got a chance to be a rock star. Is there anything else in your life that maybe when you were a little kid, I don't know, there's something that you just always wanted to do, and it's kind of the one thing in your life that you haven't had a chance to do yet?
You know, people ask me that, but it really boils down to when I was a kid, I only wanted to do two things. I wanted to be in a rock band, and I wanted to be a wrestler.
Yeah.
And both those things, like you said, gales of laughter from everybody. You'll never do this. And it's easy to sit here talking to me now, you know, Chris Jericho, Y2J. People were literally laughing in my face when I told them I wanted to be a wrestler.
Yeah.
Back in like 1988, 89, early 90. Like, that's a dumb, like, I might have told them, might as well told them I was going to join the circus to be a sword swallower. So like, what? There's no way. You're too small. You're stupid. You know, and then I went and just never listened to those negative people, and then went on to start Fozzie. And, you want to be in a band? You're a wrestler. You can't sing. It's stupid. You'll never do it. And then, you know, here we are now all these years later, and the band is doing great, and I'm Y2J or whatever you want to say. So all these other things I do are kind of offshoots from that. You know, it's all part of... I'm a creative person. I'm an artist. I enjoy, you know, entertaining. That's what I do. It's my life. And you can't wrestle forever. And as much as I think some of my fans would want me to just wrestle until I'm 70, until I explode in a puff of dust in the middle of the ring, ain't going to happen with me. And you should have known that about me from the moment you became a Chris Jericho fan. You know, I've never done things like anybody else, and I've always done other things. So it still surprises me this day when people seem so shocked that, what, he's leaving the WWE, just came back. Well, that's why I came back, was as a present, as a gift, as a treat, as a homage, as a tribute to my fans. You know, I know that they like seeing me in wrestling, and as long as I feel that I can come back and work at the absolute top level that I ever have and be Chris Jericho, the level that I've set for myself, I'll come back and wrestle as much as I can whenever the time and the schedule allows it. But the day, and I'm not, and I think, you know, we just met today, Brian, but you know my reputation and how I am. The day, the moment I feel like I can't do this the way that I want to do it, the day I do a dropkick and can't get to, you know, the guy's forehead, or the day I decide not to jump off the top of a cage. That's why I did it, because I want to do this to show that I'll always still go the extra mile. And the day that I don't, I'm gone. I don't care what the situation or circumstance is. I won't do it.
Now, obviously, a lot of people said that. CM Punk is gone, and he's claiming he will never come back. Do you think he's ever coming back?
I don't know, man. I don't know really anything about Punk. You know, we used to talk quite often, and not really about wrestling stuff. I mean, obviously, you can see the times we worked together, which was multiple times over the years, even before he was, you know, the pipe bomb CM Punk. We worked hundreds of times in 08 and 09 when I was Suit and Tie Jericho. Even before that, we headlined a whole, we were talking back when we worked our last match last year at Extreme Rules in Chicago, that we worked an entire European tour in the main event against each other, and he was the champion.
Mm-hmm.
People don't even remember that. He was the champ before the pipe bomb thing. And, you know, we had always had great chemistry, one of my favorite guys to work with. And then when he did, when he left the WWE, he never talked to me again.
Yeah.
You know, I've never heard one peep or squeak or anything from him again. You know, and I reached out to him a couple of times just about, you know, hey, I'm watching The Clash from 78, whatever, and it's nothing. So that's his decision. And that's kind of a drag. It's like, you know, I understand professionally not wanting to be old, but like kind of leaving your friends behind. Like,
yeah.
I don't give a fuck if he wrestles or not. It doesn't matter to me. Never did. You know, because I went through the same thing he did in 2005. I was burned out, did not want to wrestle. The only difference was I kind of timed it out so I knew my contract was coming up and this is it. And they even came to me to resign me, but I cut them off at the pass and said, don't even say anything because I'm not resigning, because I didn't want them to think I wasn't resigning because of money, because I knew they were going to cut my salary. I knew it. I could tell. I could just tell what I was doing. I was getting lower and lower on the card, and they were having a meeting, Vince and Johnny Ace. We need to talk to you about your deal. We'd like to resign you, but stop right there. Don't even say a number because I'm not coming back. Really? No. Are you sure? Yes. Well, when can we see you again? 5 months? Nope. 6 months? Nope. A year? Nope. When are you coming back? I don't know, but it's not going to be anytime soon. And it took 2.5 years.
Yep.
People forget that 2.5 years I was gone. I didn't watch wrestling at all.
But you know what? The difference between you and Punk is I've been... He left, and at least when you left, you had like a lot of irons in the fire. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You had tons of stuff that you wanted to do and could do. And I don't know anything about CM Punk, but this is a guy that he's just loved wrestling forever.
Mm-hmm.
It was his whole life. He worked so hard to get where he was, and now he's just going to completely step away forever. Like, what's the guy going to do?
As a professional, you know, and as a passionate person, you know, people always say, man, I wish I could win the lottery because then I wouldn't have to do anything. Like, if I won the lottery, I wouldn't stop a damn thing.
That's right.
Because you can't. If you have a desire to be something or create something, I'll tell you something else too, man. And I don't care who you are. It doesn't matter to me. There is a euphoria that you get from being great at something, especially something that we're in front of a crowd and manipulating a crowd into mm-hmm. doing whatever you want. The power that you have, you know, and it's like, you know, I can do that. Like I can manipulate a crowd. I can make a crowd cheer or boo. I can get them to do whatever I want. And it's a magic. And when you don't have that, I mean, it's one of the reasons why I know Rock comes back, even if it's just once in a while, because you can go film 100 movies and make $17 gazillion and win 55 Oscars. But you don't get that instant electricity and the gratification and the feedback from a live audience. And that's why with me, like, you know, when I'm not in the WWE, I still have that with Fozzy. It's there.
Yep.
I step off one stage right into another.
Yep.
So, I mean, some of the stages aren't as big. Some of them are bigger, you know, but it doesn't matter. 10 or 10,000, you get that drug. And for Punk not to have that in any way, shape, or form, I know he goes to hockey games a lot. Bet you that's why, because mm-hmm. it's fun to be part of a large audience and enjoying the emotion and the energy. But sooner or later, he's gonna need something to replace that. And maybe he'll come back to wrestling, maybe he won't. But like I'll say this, if you would have asked me, how long has he been gone from the business now? 8 months, 9 months? If you would have asked me, you know, 9 months
Rumble.
After I left, am I coming back? I would have said, I don't think so.
Yeah.
You know, a year and a half, I don't think so. The only time I decided to come back is when I saw Cena versus Michaels at WrestleMania and just happened to watch it because it was WrestleMania. Plus, I'm a big, you know, Shawn Michaels fan. He wasn't supposed to be in the main event.
Mm-hmm.
Hunter got hurt. Cena and Michaels, I'd like to see that. First match I'd watched in almost 2 years. And when I was done, I was like, oh, my God.
Gotta go
here
back.
Here it comes, yeah.
Yep.
And then the next night they had that, or a week later, whatever, they had an hour-long match on Raw in Italy. And that's when it was like, all right, I better start, you know, going and getting a new workout regimen and start dieting because I'm going back.
Yeah.
You know, in one way, shape, or form.
Yeah. Now, on that note, I mean, are you on the European tour or?
Yeah, I'm on the European tour for a week.
They asked
me out of the blue, can you do the whole tour? And I was like, no, I can't do it. I have stuff going on the week before and I was like kind of blindsided, and they're like, well, can you do any of it? And I said, well, I can do, I guess technically I could do the last week. And they said, well, let's see what we can think of. And then they came back and said, okay, well, we don't need you now. Thanks for your consideration, which I loved. Like, you fucking called me, you know? And then, and then be honest, Reigns got hurt.
Yeah.
And there was a big hole left. So they, you know, asked me if I would do it. And I said, sure. But it's just for those six shows, which is interesting because I said, just put me on the live events. And I think I'm actually doing SmackDown. And I said, Vince, you want me to come back just for one show?
Oh, really?
It seems kind of weird to me. And he's like, well, I don't know yet. And I was like, why don't you just put me on the live event?
Yeah.
He's like, no, I might want to have you on SmackDown. I said, well, I don't think it's right, but if you want me to come back and we'll win the world title, you know, for one night, I guess I'll do it.
That's right.
You know, but yeah, so it's six shows and that's it. So don't get any misconceptions, people watching. Jericho's coming back in November. I get people all the time at these signings I've been doing over the last week. Okay, we'll see you in November. We'll see you in November. Unless you're going to be in Liverpool, Bournemouth, Newcastle, Glasgow, Braunschweig, or Frankfurt, you ain't going
to
see me.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned the ability to manipulate the crowd and... I guess the question is that a lost art today? The way that the people are taught in NXT and the way that they're kind of they're taught to work TV like right out of the gate now, as opposed to back in the day where you had to work in front of a live audience and you had to manipulate the audience. Do you feel that some of the younger guys coming up today have never really got an opportunity to learn how to really manipulate an audience?
Well, I mean. You know, there's nothing worse than interviewing somebody who's in a sport or something that talks about, well, you know, back in the good old days, you know, everything now sucks. And things change, you know, and this is the way that the business has gone. The days of guys going worldwide like I did with my generation are pretty much gone. There's still a few. I mean, you see like a Cesaro or an Ambrose. I think Seth Rollins probably did.
Or actually a few of the guys in NXT now.
Like, yeah, Neville.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how much they went to Japan, but I know they were there. Neville especially, I think, went there quite a bit.
Yeah, Neville and what's his name? Devitt.
Okay, oh, yeah, yeah, right, right, yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, and then now they have Kevin Steen. Of course, then they got, what do they call him now?
Hideo Itami.
Itami, right. So, I mean, you've got those guys down there. But, and also, too, we don't know what Vince thinks of those guys. That's another thing.
Well, that's true.
It's always the thing. You know, yeah. You could come in there and be the greatest thing ever, and if Vince thinks you're too small or too boring or whatever, you know how he is.
Mm-hmm.
I think that every generation has a certain way they came in, you know, and the way I came in was through all these different countries, and it wasn't just wrestling lessons. It was life lessons that I learned.
Yeah.
You know, and also how to get over. How to get over in any way, shape, or form. Remember WCW? One time I had a match against Craig Pittman in the New Orleans Silverdome. There was 40,000 people there. And Tax saw Jim Duggan had a promo before us. And his promo was supposed to go 5 minutes. And, dude, it was 5 minutes. And it was 8 minutes. And it was 12 minutes. And our match went from 10 to... And we ended up having, I think it was a minute and 7 seconds or something. You've got a minute and 7 seconds. Like, it fucking takes, like, 30 seconds to walk to the ring. It's a stadium.
Yeah.
And, like, what can I possibly do in 1 minute to try and make a statement? I don't remember what I did specifically, but I remember having that mindset. I've got 1 minute in front of 5 million people or 10, whatever was watching Nitro at the time. I better do something.
Yeah.
And when you get that attitude and get that mindset, no matter what position you're in, you can make it work. And what position you're in, you can make it good. And sometimes you're on top and sometimes you're not. You know, I remember... I came in with the big brouhaha with The Rock and the countdown and this and other thing. And about, I guess, a month later, maybe, or 2 months later, I was, you know, losing to D'Lo Brown on Heat and Stevie Richards and Gangrel and the Ho Train, Godfather.
The Godfather, yeah.
You know, and it's just like, how the hell did I get here when 2 months ago I was like the hottest guy in the business? Well, that's how the business works. So.
Yep.
Now I got to go back into my old method of I have to make everything count and I have to take advantage of this. No matter how shitty it is, I have to make it good. So a lot of the guys now don't have the experience to do that, maybe. Some of them do, like Daniel Bryan, for example. I think Cesaro has it because they know there's ups and downs in the business. Other guys that come in and, you know, they breeze through and then they're done, you know, 4 months later and don't know how to get back. You know, like a guy like Fandango, for example. He doesn't know what to do because he doesn't have the experience to deal with it. Big E, you know, a year ago I was teaming with Cena. Now I'm not doing anything. I'm not even on the show. What do I do?
Yep.
You know, so that's all part of experience, and you can't teach experience. And that's why I can go back for as long as I want, at least I hope, because I think of things differently than the way most guys do. I know how to work a crowd differently than most guys do. I know how to play a character better than most guys do. And you are playing a character in the WWE. You can't pretend to play one. You have to be one.
Yep.
You know, and I write about it in The Best of the World at What I Have No Idea, that whole transformation in 08 when I went from kind of this real stagnant, stale Y2J, you know, 3 years past the expiration date of being cool, to tights turn into trunks, countdown gone, Y2J gone, catchphrases gone, highlight reel gone, over the top comedy gone. What am I doing? I'm wearing suit and ties. I'm talking very slowly and very darkly and very intensely. I'm using big words that talk over people's heads because people don't like being spoken down to. There's no merchandise allowed. There's nothing cool about this character. If I say anything where I see a sign the next week, I'm a hypocrite, Jericho. Stop. Done. Not saying it anymore. That type of attitude, you got to take a chance when you do that, you know? And it worked, but I mean, I was getting attacked on the streets, in parking lots, people rushing the ring, people throwing D batteries at me. D batteries, the big ones.
Oh, yeah.
Who the hell brings D batteries to a wrestling match? You know, they bring them in a boom box or a Teddy Ruxpin doll or something. But that's what I was dealing with, you know, and you know, glow stick riots, like all that stuff. There's a couple of really good chapters about that in the book where it was cool, but it was very taxing. It's hard people to really hate you that much. Where they're physically attacking me on the street, dude. Like, I don't want to fight people, and I'm fighting fans in Victoria, BC. It's on YouTube. You can go watch it right now.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, but that's all because I just really harnessed this character and I think got something going that hadn't been done up until that point, or if it had been, it had been a while, and it hasn't been done since. And I don't know if it can be done anymore. I don't think they want that type of a reaction anymore.
Now, what do you think of Dean Ambrose? Because he strikes me as a guy that, you know, he's being written for just like everybody else. But when he goes out there and does his promos or he does his back and forth with somebody, for some reason, there's something about him where I can really buy into what he's saying. You know what I mean? Like, it feels real to me in the sense that feels like he's just saying what's on his mind. Like, that's him. Like, that's Dean Ambrose. And you know that he's, you know, probably reciting the same lines as he was given. But, you know, do you find that about him? Is there anybody else that sticks out to you as this guy's really good at making it real?
I think, let me preface this by saying, I think the days of needing the face of the company are over, because it's just about the company now. You know, I don't think they have to worry about finding the next John Cena or the next Rock or the next Austin. They just have to worry about building the WWE as they are. Having said that, I think that Dean Ambrose is the closest thing they have to being somebody that could be the face of the company. Because as you know, there's always guys, and it's been this way for 40 years, that they will say, he's the next guy. This guy right here. But newsflash, it's not who they say he's the next guy that does it. It's who the crowd says,
yep.
Oh yeah, we like him, but that's the one we like. Well, we don't like him, like this guy. Yeah, but we want that guy. Well, you're supposed to like this guy, right? This guy. Yeah, that guy's great, but what about that guy? And that's how the business has always gone. And I find Ambrose, I mean, especially with the Reigns and Ambrose, I mean, Reigns looks the part, you know, he's great. He's a stud. But Ambrose has the X factor. The same way that Jeff Hardy has the X factor, or kind of to a lesser extent, Daniel Bryan. But Daniel Bryan, I think, just on pure talent and the yes chant just took over. But talking about a guy who you just look at him and just everything he does is just cool, and he's not doing anything. Jeff and Dean are the two guys that like I said, Ambrose reminds me a lot of Jeff Hardy. And that, like you said, it's just him. It's just me, man. And he was like that when he first came in, and he's almost a little socially awkward when you talk to him, but he's not, but he's just kind of like, yeah, you know, and this is kind of how I talk, and you know, it's just kind of nice, you know, like that sort of thing. And he was like that when he first came in. I remember Regal was and Mick were saying this guy's great, and I didn't really know him, but I would see him on house shows, and we talked a little bit about what he should do to change his gimmick or what he should try, and I helped him out with a couple of bits of advice, and I hope they were good bits, because you know, he'll be a champion someday, and I hope he remembers me as being a good guy, not someone trying to give him stupid advice, like when Vampiro told me to wear a loincloth in Mexico. But I think he's definitely one of the shining lights right now, and will be the top babyface in the company, whether they like it or not.
Now, we got a few minutes left here, and I would be very sad if we did not talk about After Dark and Art Bell. So you were an Art Bell fan growing up, or not growing up maybe so much.
Well, I mean, kind of growing up. I mean, it was kind
mid-90s.
Of, I was led to Art Bell because I've always been into supernatural things. Mm-hmm. I've been obsessed with the Loch Ness Monster and Lake Monster since I was a kid.
Yep.
To the point where I even have a Loch Ness Monster tattooed on my arm, wearing Paul Stanley makeup, but that's besides the point. Still to this day, if you know, I jump into a deep lake in the middle of a lake, I'm always thinking like something's coming for me. I can't not think that way, to the point where it affects my activity. Like, I don't really feel like going swimming because I might get killed by a lake.
Why
monster.
Lake monsters?
I don't know. Oh, actually, I do know, because when I was young, my grandparents lived in Kelowna, BC, on the banks of the Okanagan, which is where the Okapogo lives, right? Yeah. And I remember going out there with my grandfather, who of course thought it was just a bunch of bullshit, but he used to think it was funny. We'd go fishing, which I didn't really ever want to do, but I had to because my mom and dad made me go out into the lake, go fishing, and he would take bologna out of the sandwiches and throw them in the lake and say, "Okapogo, Okapogo, come get it." Then he'd be like, "Okapogo loves bologna." And I'd be like, "Grandpa, stop, stop." At the bottom of the boat, like hiding, convinced that the Okapogo was going to rise from the depths, pluck my grandfather out of the damn boat, take him underneath, and then tip the boat over and then come get me too. So I probably like, you know, a childhood traumatic thing. So it's always been that sort of stuff. And plus, I've always loved horror movies. And the other thing that really got to me is demonic possession and the Antichrist. I've always been into that because those type of things to me could be real. You know, possession could be real. Like seeing like, you know, a giant Godzilla, probably not going to happen.
Unlikely.
Right. But someone getting possessed by a demon or an Antichrist coming to destroy the world, that could happen. So I've always been into that sort of thing, which led me to Art Bell when I was doing a lot of driving when I first got into WCW. You know, you're driving from town to town to town. And that was kind of the cornerstone to listen to because this was before Silent Radio. You could find him anywhere.
Oh, yeah, it was on AM.
Yeah.
So no matter where you went.
That's right. You could be on like 1,000, you know, AM 1,000. And as you're driving, as it starts to get a little scratchy and you're leaving one state to the next, go through the dial and here he is over on 580 AM, you know. So, yeah, I always kind of got into art, but really, you know, I remember UFOs. I used to ask my dad if UFOs were real when I was probably 6 or 7. Something that's been an interest and a borderline obsession of mine since I was a young kid.
So you've on your podcast, you've interviewed some different people about these topics. And what has been your favorite interview so far on the topic? And what other stuff are you looking to get someone on to talk about?
Well, it's funny because, excuse me, I knew that you had the show After Dark. And that's why I said, like, we've never met face-to-face, but we've talked quite a bit. Because I remember I asked Dave for your email because I want to see, like, how can you get all these guests? Like, how can I get hip to that? Like, how are you doing this? And then you pointed me in the direction of Jeff Belanger, who was great. He was a ghost hunting guy.
Yeah.
And then Jeff hooked me up with a guy called Eric Altman, who's a Bigfoot expert. He also hooked me up with a guy called Peter Robbins, who's a UFO expert who told some chilling stories. And then I think this has only been those three. And I had Lauren Coleman, who you've interviewed.
Lauren Coleman, yeah.
He's a famed cryptozoologist.
Yeah.
So I'd like to do more, maybe some kind of a witch thing, a coven. Maybe somebody about some kind of demonic possession, doomsday theories, you know, just all that sort of stuff. All that stuff really intrigues me. And I know, like, much like Art Bell, I mean, a lot of it was like reading the National Enquirer or, you know, watching wrestling or, you know, it's not real. Like, I remember one time we were driving, as a matter of fact, I was driving from Calgary to Orlando when I signed with WCW and finally had to move from Canada to the States. And we were driving in the middle of the night listening to this guy who was telling Art Bell that he's being chased by aliens and that that they were coming after him. The men in black were coming after him. This is a long, strung out docudrama for about an hour.
Yeah.
And then the guy's like, "Oh, my God, Art, they're here for me. They're here for me. Oh, my God." And I was like, "Hello, where are you? Where did you go? Where did he go?" And that was, "Oh, my God, did the men in black get him?" So that was just in the middle of the night in WCW. But yeah, so I would like to do more of these things because when I first got the podcast, Talk is Jericho, I knew I'd have a lot of wrestlers on because that's my background. That's what people want. But I could never do all wrestling, nor do I want to. To me, that'd be the most boring thing you could do.
Yeah.
So I like having, you know, obviously musicians, hockey players, actors, porn stars, you know, reality stars. But I said I want to have, you know, supernatural guys on it. So I just want to, you know, give me a list of your good guests, man, and I'll see which ones I like, and you can hook me up with them.
I will hook you up. You know, when I started, it was the same thing. It's like, how much can you talk about wrestling? And I always wanted to do this show. And so I just did it because, like, you know, you're paying your subscription. It's not like you're paying more for it. If you don't like it, don't listen.
Right.
And, man, it picked up so big. And I don't know if it's just because if you're a wrestling fan, you kind of like fringe stuff. And so it's the same sort of...
Maybe.
It seems like it's the same kind of people that like wrestling are the people that are going to like this kind of thing. Because they're both out there, you know what I mean?
Well, and I'm one of them. It's like I found that there's a real connection between wrestling, heavy metal, rock and roll, and horror movies. If you like two of those things, chances are you'll like the third. It's just the way that, for whatever reason, you know, and... I like to try, and it's sometimes it's a losing battle, but I'll never stop waging it. I want people that are fans of Jericho the wrestler to expand their minds a little bit, you know? And if you like me, trust what I'm selling you. Trust me that if I have someone on my show that I think is cool and interesting, that you will like it.
Yep.
You know, I mean, I had DMC on just this week. Run DMC, freaking DMC, man. Big wrestling fan, great guy, and man, he is one of the best guests I've ever had.
Really?
Just his voice and his timbre, and he started rapping, and he told a story about the beginning of Run DMC and touring with the Beastie Boys and comic books and this. He's got it's such a good listen. And it did one of my worst first day numbers. And so I go on online and say, listen, guys, if you've ever trusted me, I'm telling you, listen to this.
Yeah.
And the first comment from some jerk off on Instagram is, never heard of him, ain't listening, sorry, buddy. I'm like, dude, first of all, you never heard of Run DMC? Like, have you not heard of the Beatles and the Stones either? It's like, Run DMC, man.
Yeah.
And second of all, if I'm telling you, like, if I was a big, you know, I am a big, you know, I don't know, Paul Stanley fan, and Paul Stanley had a podcast and said, listen, this show is about gardening. Even if you don't like gardening, trust me, listen to it. Yeah. I would go on and listen to it. And if Paul thought it was good, I'm going to think it's good. I bet you I'll really enjoy it. But some wrestling fans are very close-minded, even to the point of, you know, activities. Quit Fozzy, it sucks, go back to wrestling. Quit Talk as Jericho, it sucks, go back to wrestling. Your web show sucks, go back to wrestling. And then I do go back to wrestling, and it's like, oh, he's only back for 3 months. He's a part-timer, he's leeching. Okay. Go back. Oh, you lose all the time. You never win. Okay, I go and beat Bray Wyatt under pay-per-view. Oh, you're just burying the new guys. It's like, what do you want?
Yeah.
You know, you can't please people. Can't please some people ever. So I would rather just please myself and do things that interest me and do things that I like to do. And, you know, talking about the supernatural is something that I really enjoy doing. And I want to try and pass that on to people.
And if you love it,
people.
It's going to be a good podcast.
Absolutely. Like, I don't half-ass anything, man. If I'm into it. Like I said, trust me, you'll be into it too. Like, just give me that one little inkling of trust, because I'll give you the Triple H's and I'll give you the Batistas and I'll go try and get the biggest wrestling guys I can, or, you know, the most interesting ones. But when I give you, you know, an Olympic gold medalist that tells me what it's like in the Olympic Village, do people hook up? Do they get drunk? They sneak vodka in? Like, that to me is just as interesting, right?
Yeah.
Or, you know, someone telling me about you know, the early days of New York hip hop, or how Jam Master Jay was shot and killed in his studio and no one knows how. No one knows why. No one knows who did it. Now you've got rap. You've got the thing with Aerosmith. You've got a murder mystery. I mean, this is serious shit, man. Go check it out. You'll like it. So that's the war you got to wage when you're dealing with loyal fans who are amazingly great, but sometimes need to open up their minds a bit.
And final question here, as I look around this room, if I brought somebody in here and I said, hey, this is Chris Jericho, wrestler or rock star?
They would
say rock star.
Yeah.
they would say rock star, like without any question. And not anything physical, but just, you know, you got the tattoos and you look around here and it looks like a rock star lives here. It does not look like a wrestler lives here.
Yeah, you got the bottle of wine here.
Yeah.
I should have strewn some underwear about some panties.
What did you have playing when I came in?
We listened to us. It was on shuffle. It was Iron Maiden.
It went
from Iron Maiden, Can I Play With Madness, and then actually went to early U2 Refugee right before we turned it off.
That's right.
You know, that's the thing. And, anyone that knows me is probably sick of hearing me say this right now, but for some people that don't, you know, like I said, when I was a kid, I wanted to be in a rock band. I wanted to be a wrestler. I didn't just wake up one day and decide I was going to do either one. It's part of who I am. It's my genetic. It's my makeup. It's my passion. What would you rather be, wrestler or rock star? I don't even like the word rock star. Would you wrestler or in a rock band? I don't have to choose, because I'm probably the only person in the world that did them both at a high level and took a lot of flack for it and still do, but I don't give a shit. It's what I love to do. It's what I want to do. It's what I do. And I've never been a guy like Cody Rhodes, for example, knows everything about wrestling. He can tell you who won the Intercontinental Championship in 1988 against Two-Wood Arena. Me, yep. I've never been that. I don't know anything. I just found out today that I won 28 titles in the WWE because Joey Styles sent me a link. But when it comes to music and rock and roll, I will go toe-to-toe with anybody on this planet for trivia and minutia and rock yep. and roll history. That's my thing, you know? So, I always wanted to be the ultimate frontman rock and roll guy in wrestling. I wanted to be the Paul Stanley of wrestling, the David Lee Roth of wrestling. And then when we started Fozzy, I took the same qualities that I was using for Y2J that I stole from rock and roll and put it back in there again. So it's just, to me, it's one and the same, but I've always had that rock and roll vibe, the way I dress, the way I think, the way I act, whether I was wrestling or in the band. And all the mischief and all the other stuff you get into, which is all detailed in my new book, The Best in the World at What I Have No Idea.
The Good segue, Best right? in the World at What I Have No Idea. It is in bookstores everywhere, everybody, so go over there and check that out. And we're going to have Jericho back on again, I believe Thursday. I'm not sure when, but Dave and I will be talking to him about more wrestling. And don't let me forget to ask you about not knowing anything about wrestling history, because I have something I want to ask about that.
Please do. And let me ask you a quick question, wrap it up quickly. Who's your favorite guest you've ever had on After Dark?
Oh, man. Oh,
like, who does one stand out?
You know what? I had, oh my God, I forget her name. But she was a Jonestown survivor.
Oh, yeah.
Unbelievable.
Wow.
Unbelievable. Yeah, I didn't know anything. I read up all about it, and she came on, and I was like, oh, man, I'm not going to be able to do this. And we went like an hour and a half, and it was like the most amazing. It may have been the most amazing interview I've ever done with anybody anywhere.
Wow.
It was amazing.
I'll have to check that out, man.
Yeah, I'll send you a link to that. But,
please do. Well, thanks, man. I appreciate you having me on and setting up your studio and sitting on the floor.
Sitting on the floor, yeah, like a yogi here. But yeah, thanks so much. And of course, thanks everybody for listening. Don't forget to check out The Best in the World at What I Have No Idea. It is available Amazon.com, booksellers everywhere, and Jericho's back next week. So check it out, and we'll talk to you again very soon.
Yeah, boy.